identify it before we start talking.
All right. I get a lot of mementos. That's old Thomas Jim over in that lally. Over in that lally.
This conversation between Joe Sewell and Walter Langford is being taped in Joe's home in Tuscaloosa, Alabama on June 26, 1982. Tell me a little about, first about your boyhood and how you first got to playing ball and where.
I was born and raised down in Elmo County. Titus, T-I-T-U-S, Alabama.
Yeah, I see that.
My father was a country doctor.
Is that?
And he practiced medicine in the country 40 years, in the horse and buggy days.
Yeah, yeah.
He stepped them in your horse and curried them in your horse.
Uh-huh.
But we didn't have anything to do. And we got to play in it. Every crossroads had a baseball team.
That was true in those days.
That's right. We didn't have no... Didn't have automobiles. There wasn't any automobiles.
Didn't have any radio.
No radio.
TV.
Nothing entertained us.
That's right.
That's where we entertained ourselves.
How many brothers were in your family?
I had four brothers. Well, three brothers. There's four of us and two sisters.
Did all the boys play ball? All athletes. Mm-hmm.
I had three brothers. Luke and Tommy went to the major leagues with myself.
Yeah.
The three of us went to the major league. Tommy didn't stay too long.
Yeah.
He was with the Cubs organization.
Mm-hmm.
And my oldest brother, who I've always thought was the best athlete in the family, he never did. He played on the University of Alabama baseball team, but never did. He never did. He went. He was in World War One and studied medicine. Never did get involved.
Mm-hmm.
But I played baseball all my life. Winter, summer, anytime it wasn't raining or too cold, we used to play.
That's what I was doing too. I know what you mean. So after a while, did you go to the minors for a while before? You did, I know. You went to the.
As I said, my father was a doctor, and he saw the value of an education for his children. He educated every one of we children. My oldest brother came to the University of Alabama, and then me and Luke and Tommy, all of we children came to the University of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
But when I came to the University of Alabama, that was the best break that I ever had in my life. Because that gave you the exposure.
Mm-hmm.
You had to have exposure to somebody on upstairs,
that's
you see,
right.
that could carry on up.
That's right.
And we had a coach that come in here from Cleveland named Zen Scott.
Mm-hmm.
You know, football wasn't too prominent in college then.
That's
they
right.
all had teams, but they wasn't too prominent.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a coach come in here named Zen Scott, just to coach football 1 year.
Hmm.
That the next year, somebody else come in.
Yeah, yeah.
So Zen Scott, he coached at Case University 1 year there.
In Cleveland.
Then he came down here to coach that year, and he rode on the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Cleveland Plain Dealer. Well, he got down here and he saw Rick Stevenson, he saw Luke, and he saw myself, saw Jim Boyd Boone,
yeah. And
all we, Lena Stiles.
Oh,
we
yeah.
had, there were seven of we fellas went off with our team out here to the major leagues and stayed.
And you beat that.
You tell folks that and they won't believe you.
No,
but
I don't know if that's ever happened again.
That's right. It hadn't,
yeah.
Not in this area.
Mm-hmm.
But Zen Scott recommended me to the Cleveland Indians, and Rick Stevenson and Luke, he recommended all of us.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, New Orleans was a farm club that worked with the Cleveland Indians,
mm-hmm.
and they're known as the Pelicans, New Orleans Pelicans, in the Southern League.
Yep.
All right? I signed a contract with the New Orleans Ball Club in the spring of 1920. That's when the University of Alabama season was over.
Mm-hmm.
My eligibility in baseball was over.
Mm-hmm.
And I played football out here at Alabama 3 years. But I had one more year eligibility in football. But I quit and started playing professional ball. So
you made the right move.
I said, you know what I tell them? That's the best day of work I ever did, except when I'm married. I quit playing football. But I went to New Orleans in June, and I stayed with New Orleans about a month and a half, and then Ray Chapman got killed. Yep. Carl Mays hit him in the head. It was a tragic accident, but nevertheless, and the Cleveland Ball Club were trying to win a pennant. Now, mind you, I never had seen a major league ball game.
Wow!
I didn't know anything about it. So, I went to New Orleans, and I'll never forget. Johnny Dodd was managing our club, and they called me up in the office down there after that month and a half. The morning, probably a morning or two after Ray Chapman had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, he said, Joel, says, how would you like to go to the major leagues? I says, I don't want to go. I says, I never saw a major league game. I don't know where I could play up there now. Mm-hmm. You know, the Southern League was strong then.
It was a good league, yeah.
It was a good league.
Southern League and Texas League used to have bitter battles.
That's right. They were just on a par.
Yep.
So Larry Gilbert was our center fielder. He wasn't the manager. He was our center fielder. And Larry come in about that time, and he knew the circumstances. See, he'd been with the old Boston Braves, mm-hmm. Larry Gilbert had.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, he said, Joe, you can play shortstop up there. And Larry is a fellow that it talked me into going to Cleveland.
Yeah. I see they had some character I never heard of before who played a little shortstop either before you got up there or after Chapman died in between your getting there. Harry Lundy.
All right. The Cleveland Ball Club.
Now, Harry, he hit 197, so you can understand
right.
He wasn't much of a hitter.
But he was a great fielder, but Harry pulled a hamstring, and they didn't have a shortstop. You know who was playing shortstop? Joe Evans, the left fielder was playing.
Imagine that.
Now Joe Evans went to Ole Miss over here, mm-hmm. University of Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
and he was an outfielder, mm-hmm. and a good one at that. And he eventually made a doctor, but he was playing shortstop. They didn't have any.
They were in trouble.
They were in trouble, yeah. And they were trying to win a pennant.
I know.
And there was. Seemed to me like there was about two or three games ahead along at that time. I forgot.
Well,
they were up there four or five games, and
yeah.
they were slipping fast.
And
I come in there,
mm-hmm.
and I saw the first ball game. You know, way back in that, we used to play four ball games and change and
right.
All right. I saw the last ball game that the Yankees was in there going west.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the Yankees win. And the Philadelphia come in the next day.
Mm-hmm.
But Bruce hit his 28th and 29th home run that day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he hit
new
that.
New record, yeah.
And I was, at that time.
Yeah. Well,
and I was sitting way down on the bench watching. Doc Johnson was playing first base for Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And he got five base hits for five times up and stole home.
Wow.
And Elmer Smith was playing right field, and he went to right center, and he jumped just high as he could and caught a line drive like a shot out of a cannon. I said, every time something happened, I'd get deep and deep. I said to myself, I ain't supposed to be up here.
Yeah.
So the next day, Speaker was our manager, Chris
mm-hmm.
Speaker.
Yeah.
He come out before we were dressing in the clubhouse for, mm-hmm. to go out. And he came over to me and said, Joe, you playing shortstop today?
Mm.
I said, oh, my God. So there wasn't nothing for me to do but get ready.
That's right.
All right, we went out. And naturally, all the stand was full.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally, they was all looking at me.
I didn't realize.
I didn't have sense enough to, I reckon.
Only natural that they would.
Yes.
You were the key to their hopes of success.
All right. Yep. We were playing the Athletics. And old Scott Perry was pitching.
Oh, yeah.
I'll never forget old Scott.
Yeah.
I ought to send him a Christmas card.
Good.
So Tilly Walker was playing center field, and the mm-hmm. first time up, I hit a ball to left center like a shot. Old Tilly just coasted over there and got it.
Mm.
All right. And the next time up, old Scott Perry, I never forget it. Threw me a little old slider. They call them sliders. A little nickel curve on the outside of that plate. I hit that thing over third baseman's head, and boy, way down in the corner, three bases.
Ah,
I went around them bases just like I would have. No movement at all.
You didn't even touch the ground. Yeah.
I got to third base, I said to myself, I said, sure, this ain't so tough up here.
That's right.
And from that day to this, I never have been nervous again. I played in two World Series.
Yep, yep. So, well, it shows in your career statistics, Joe. I mean, my God, you hit 300 practically every year you're up there.
Well,
I see one 299,
uh-huh.
289, and then the last 2 years you were 272, 273.
That's right.
But the 312 career average leaves you well up in the list.
I hit 353 in
323.
Yeah, and I played every inning of every ball game.
Yeah.
And drove in, I believe it was 107 runs, 109.
109. Yep.
You know what my salary was? $6,000.
Ah,
you know where that contract is now? In Cooperstown. I sent it to Cooperstown. It's in Cooperstown.
It's out of it.
I sent it up there just for that.
Oh, my. Well, of course, we know that 6,000 went many times farther in those days than 6,000 today.
But oh, yeah.
Even so, it's just like I was teaching. Starting not quite that early, but in 31, I taught at the University of Notre Dame for 5 years, getting $2,000 a year before I finally got a raise.
Yeah.
Then eventually it went on up, you know, but boy, they were, neither teachers nor ball players were very well
That's
paid
right.
in those days.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's been a lot of publicity here lately on the consecutive games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Garber, or the Dodgers?
Garvey. Yeah.
All right. He's played in 1,000 games the last week or something.
Yeah.
And the papers were full of it. They called me from New York. A newspaper writer.
Yeah.
Called me from New York and asked me what I thought about it. I said, sure, I'm glad for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see, I was third for a long time until Williams, you know, the Philip Williams.
Yeah.
The color ball.
Yeah.
And he broke my record.
Mm-hmm.
And so this little boy called me last week and wanted to know what I thought about it. I said, sure, it's all right. I hope he breaks Gary's record.
No way.
Ain't no way he can do it.
No.
But I told him this. I says, I set that record at 19-25. And I tied it again in 19-29 on the strikeout record.
Yeah.
And I says, I played all those games. And I says, I can't, I got 1,007, and I can take it down to the bank, and I can't borrow a nickel on it.
Yeah, but you can relive a lot of it, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
What was your lowest strikeout total in one season? 7 or 8, something like that?
Four?
My God.
All right.
Cheerio.
In 1932, I struck out 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't play him but 138 ball games.
Yeah.
What was it? 3?
In 32?
Yeah, it was
124. Next year was 135, your last year. You were 135 and 33, according to the encyclopedia.
You mean strikeout?
No, the number of games.
Oh.
124 games in 32.
All right.
And you struck out 3 times.
Huh? That's right.
Wow.
I believe it was. But.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It gives it here. I didn't notice.
You?
I got it. Three times.
3 times.
You had another 3 strikeout season in 1930.
That's right.
109 games, 3 strikeouts.
Uh-huh.
You had four strikeout seasons.
Mm-hmm. But that was the record. Now, who set those qualifications, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who set the four, and I don't know who set the three.
Mm-hmm.
But when the four went into the record book, like you say there,
you
had to play every inning of every ball game all year round. But now, when I was in 1932, it must have still been in there because I went to the bat over 500 times. Now, if I go to the bat
503,
if I went to the bat If it goes a bat 500 times, we're
you
back.
You qualify for the championship.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Total of 114 strikeouts.
That's right. And
in 14 years.
I took.
And there are dozens of ball players who have struck out more than that in one season.
I saw Mickey Mantle strike out full time one day in New York, and he was getting $100,000.
That's right. Yeah, but between his strikeouts, he would club them now and then too.
On the consecutive, or in on those strikeouts, the both years that I struck out four times, I took three of the four. Swung at one third strike, missed
it. So the umpire may have been wrong.
One time I know he was wrong because he come out the next day and apologized.
Did he really?
That was Bill Montgomery in St. Louis.
Yeah.
They had 3-2, and the ball was right at my cap, Bill. Right in my cab, Bill. And he said to me, he said, strike three, you're out. Says, oh, my God, I missed it, Joe.
Oh.
All in the same sentence.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't say a word. I just walked back to the bank. Well, and the next day, he came out and apologized. And I said, Bill, don't worry about it. I said, you were trying an honest one.
Yeah, that's right.
I said, don't worry
about
it.
That's right. Now, anybody's going to miss one now and then.
Yeah, I said, don't worry about it. And he always thought a lot of me after that.
Well, he should. Tell me a little about Tris Speaker as a player, as a person, as a manager.
All right. Now, you put this, this comes from me.
Yeah.
Now, I played with Tris Speaker 7 years as my center fielder.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've seen Joe DiMaggio, I've seen Willie Mays, and I've seen Sam West, Johnny Marstall, I've seen all.
Tom DiMaggio?
Uh-huh. Tom DiMaggio, and just all of them, but Tris Speaker's the greatest center fielder I ever saw.
I'm willing to believe it.
I know he is.
Yeah.
He could do so many things, and
he played in close and went back and got him when he needed to.
All right, let me tell you this. You know how a shortstop would get down.
Yeah.
You know, he gets down this way,
mm-hmm.
and when that ball would hit over my head, a shot now, bang.
Yeah.
In no time. I can't never remember. You know, when you look around, he's gone. I never saw him turn.
Gee.
Never saw him turn. He's in
tremendous reflex and the capacity for knowing where that ball's going.
Judgment.
Yeah.
And he'd go this way. The ball was coming over his head.
Yeah.
And he'd be just and he'd go way off out there and turn around and there would be that ball.
Right there.
I can't. I've asked him numbers of times.
Yeah.
He says instinct. Says I can't tell you.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Says I can't tell you.
Yeah. Some of them have got that. Most of them don't.
That's right.
Yeah.
But he's got a lifetime average of 330.
Sure.
40 somewhere.
Yeah.
There.
He's got to be in the top 10 anyway in lifetime average.
But Tris Speaker's the greatest center fielder I ever saw. And, you know, you tell some of these modern-day ball players, and they won't believe.
They can't understand it.
They can't understand.
They don't know really what you're talking about because they didn't see it. That's the trouble, I think, with getting the thing in perspective for the present-day fans. Is that they're looking only at the present crop. And there's some good ones for sure.
Oh, ain't no question about it. I ain't taking a thing away from nobody.
No, you don't have to.
Uh-uh.
It's just that there were more great players back in those early days. Hitters, I believe pitchers, and fielders. Did you see Duffy Lewis play? Harry Hooper?
Harry Hooper?
Yeah.
I played against him.
That must have been, many people say that's still the greatest outfield there was, but of course modern day people are trying to question that.
That's right.
They bring up that old fogey. Yeah. They bring up the likes of Ricky Henderson, Dwayne Murphy, and Tony Armas.
That's right.
Well, that's a good outfield. They can all throw and run and so forth, but they don't belong in the same breath with that other
one. I'm going to tell you this. Now, see, we were talking about hitting back when we were hitting. You know, the spitball was legal.
And the ball was dead.
Ball was dead.
Yeah.
If they legalize that spitball right now and give some pitcher who can perfect it, time to perfect that, get in the major leagues, some of these 250 hitters will be hitting about 150.
That's right.
And they say, well, that ball, I said they can't hit the knuckleball now.
That's right.
And a spitball, some spitball pitcher would break worse than the knuckleball.
Of course.
Kovaleski, Billy Grimes,
exactly.
Ed Walsh,
yep.
Old John Quinn, Fable, a lot of them fellas.
Yeah, that's right. That's
I can't think of all of them.
No, you couldn't possibly.
We had a fellow, Johnny Allen, on our club.
Yeah.
And they fuss about John Allen throwing a spitball. But John Allen, he used to cheat a little bit,
mm-hmm.
So I never did. You couldn't tell that his spitball wouldn't break. More than an inch or two, and they say, and they couldn't hit it.
Well. Who's the closest to you in the fewest strikeouts? Was Nellie Fox?
Charlie Holliker.
Of the Cubs.
Of the Cubs.
Yeah.
He was, now the present day, I'm not positive on Nellie Fox, I don't know.
He had a season, as I remember, where he struck out only 8 times.
All right,
that's pretty darn good.
Might be.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, that's a slow.
Let me borrow your book again.
Yeah, it is.
We'll just check a couple of those things now and then, because that's easier to get to in that sort of thing than in the one I got here. In the meantime, why don't you tell me a little about Larry Gardner and Steve O'Neill and Smokey Joe Wood, a few others.
All right. Well, now, you're talking about the old Cleveland ball club.
Yes, sir.
That was a good ball club. That was...
No doubt about it.
If we was intact now in the either major league, we'd have the pennant won by at least 2/3
mm-hmm,
of the season,
mm-hmm.
just after the 4th of July.
Yep.
But Larry Gardner, when I first went to Cleveland, he and Bill Warmer helped me. They were right by the side. If one was on the right, and the other was on the left.
Yeah.
And they were trying to win a pennant too. We was all trying to win.
Yeah. It had to be a good team effort.
There had to be a team effort. Larry Gardner was a good third baseman. Mm-hmm. You see, he helped a shortstop. He'd come across that, he'd help me play the hitters. Bill Warmer did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a good infield. We had a good ball club.
Good pitching.
You had good pitching.
With Bagby, Kovaleski, Caldwell,
Walter Mayo.
Mayles. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then George Euler was just breaking in there.
That's right. And we'll talk to him later, too.
Yeah. But George was, he ought to be in the Hall of Fame.
I agree.
In Cooperstown.
Joe, there's so many good players that ought to be in there. They're never going to make it.
All right. Ray Stevenson.
Yeah, exactly. Charlie Grimm.
Charlie Grimm. Ought to be in there.
You can make a list as long as your arm. And that darn committee can only put in 2 a year.
2 a year.
They'll never do justice.
And you know, I found out last year, Charlie Derringer told me this, that, Rick Stevenson, if he comes up, and if he don't get 100 votes, they pigeonhole him, you know. Then he's got to stay in that pigeonhole 5 years.
Oh, boy.
And then some of those boys be dead and gone.
Oh, sure.
Years. And then they bring him out and vote on him again. And if they don't get 100 votes, they put them back in the pitcher's hole.
But if they bring them out and vote on them and put them in after they're dead and gone, it's nice. But why didn't they do it when they were still living?
All right. It's like I told them when I was in. My record ain't a bit better than it was in 1936 I quit.
That's right. And they finally caught up with you in 77.
77.
Yeah. And Travis
Jackson. But you know, some of the fellows on that committee. Never heard of me.
They don't belong on it.
That's right.
My God.
That's right.
What the hell? That's
but now you that's back awful. To the old Cleveland ball club.
Yeah.
You talk about Steve O'Neill.
Mm-hmm.
Steve O'Neill was he was finishing up when I
mm-hmm.
got there. But he was a good receiver, a good as smart as he could be.
Yeah.
And he could block that play better than any catcher that I ever saw.
Is that right?
But he One day I saw Cobb sliding him. Cobb was on second base.
Mm-hmm.
And Cobb and the ball got there at the same time at the plate. And
O'Neill had a block.
O'Neill had a block. And Cobb jumped in there. And Steve had on them shin guards.
Mm-hmm.
And Cobb just cut them shin guards, cut big holes in them shin guards.
You're kidding.
And then, you know what Steve did? Tagged him, and the umpire called him out. Steve Waldo didn't even rub, didn't do anything. Still, but Cobb lay there on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You lay there on, yeah, you lay there on the ground. Yeah. His hat fell off, I never forget. He lay there on the ground, and after a while he reached over and got his cap. He got off. He just couldn't make it. But he was so determined he was going back to the outfield, he went on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that was...
That was typical of O'Neill.
That's right. Bill Warmby was a good infield. We had a good infield. Doc Johnson and George Burns alternated first base.
Yeah.
And in the outfield, we had Elmer Smith. Joe Wood played right field.
Mm-hmm. And
Joe hurt his arm pitching, you see, and he came over there.
And became a pretty good hitter.
He was a good hitter. Yeah. He helped us a lot.
Yeah.
And he left and went and coached Yale.
Yeah.
Yale. But the only way that you could get a base hit in that outfield, Jameson was playing left field. He ought to be in the Hall of Fame.
There's another.
Jameson, poor fellow, dead now.
Yeah.
Jameson, Speaker, and Elmer Smith, there. The only way that a hitter could get a base hit out there would be a line drive.
Mm-hmm.
If a ball took that, he's a dead duck.
He's finished, yeah.
He's a dead duck.
I knew old Stan Kovaleski a little bit. He's lived in South Bend, you know.
On this side.
And still lives.
He'd been up to Cooperstown.
Yeah.
He wasn't there the last 2 years. He was having problems walking.
Have you been
by there?
No, I haven't been to South Bend much in recent years.
But I'm going to tell you this. You can put Kovaleski in with him. The top-ranking spitball pitchers. He was, he ranked right along with Buddy Grimes, as I say, Ed Walsh, and all good ones. I've seen Kovaleski on good right-hand hitters now, good. He start that spitball at him, you see, and they'd fall down.
Sure.
They'd go on, and that spitball would break right over the plate.
That must be make a guy furious.
You can't imagine a fella.
Yeah.
But now the wind had to be blowing against him.
Yeah.
A little
bit. That's right.
You know them currents in them ballparks. You know, can't
they
tell.
They swirl around.
That's right.
Yeah.
So
old Kovaleski was born in 1889, July 13th. He's going to be next month. He's going to be 93 years old. Think of that.
That's about right.
Yeah.
I'm 83.
Yeah.
I'll be 84 in October.
So is Riggs, I think.
Hey, Steve's 84 now.
Yeah, and
he'll be 85.
And Charlie Graham will be 84 in August.
That's right. We're all about the same. We play against each other.
Yeah. Well, old Stanley had a series in 20 there, didn't he? Three games.
Yeah.
Five hits each game.
He was right in his prime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was a pleasure to just tell you the truth, it was just a pleasure to play behind him.
And his brother threw some mighty good games for a few years, Harry Kovaleski.
He was over Detroit.
Yeah. Well, he started with Washington.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. Harry says 19 to 22 Washington, and went to Chicago American League team in 22. I thought he played longer than that, but that, no, hold the phone.
I thought he was with Detroit, son.
They don't list him here.
Don't list him with Detroit.
Well, see, this thing... breaks them down by period in which they did most of their pitching.
Did
he may be in the earlier period.
Uh-huh.
Let me catch him over here.
Well, I could be mistaken.
No, I think you're right. He was with Detroit. Harry Kovaleski, the Giant Killer. 07 to 09, Phillies. 10, Cincinnati. 14, 18, Detroit.
That's right.
Yeah. He 182 and lost 55. I think he had one real good season.
Mm-hmm.
He used to ask trick questions. Years ago, what brother team won the most games, pitchers in the major leagues? And most people would say Kovaleski's, but it was the Mathesons. His brother Henry won one game or none. I forget which. It was Christie won 373s. A trick question.
Yeah. Well, the Dean brothers won quite a few.
No, Paul played out real soon. His arm got bad after two good seasons. And Dizzy's arm went bad after several seasons.
Yeah. Well, I hit against Dizzy and Paul both. Paul was tougher to hit for me.
That's I think is either JoJo or Travis told me that. JoJo Moore. Travis.
Yeah. Paul was tougher to hit than Dizzy.
It said he had a better curve for what?
That's right. Good curveball.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
But they were both good pitchers now. They
weren't
the same wrong.
In those few years there,
I've been asked frequently about who the greatest pitchers that I ever saw.
Yeah, I want to know that too.
All right. A pitcher that was tough for me wouldn't be tough for you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or vice versa.
Austin the cage, yeah.
But now, the greatest pitchers... The greatest left-hander was Lefty Grove.
I'll buy that.
And the greatest right-hander overall was Walter Johnson.
Right.
But the toughest pitcher that I ever hit at was Dutch Leonard. Old Boston went to Detroit.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was the toughest pitcher that
Pub
I ever
hit. Or Hubert or something.
Yeah, well, I forgot his first name.
Yeah.
But I hate to see him warm up. He was a left-handed pitcher and a spitball pitcher now.
Oh, well.
Left-handed spitball pitcher, and he had a good curveball, and he was fast, and he was mean. He'd knock you down and throw you that curveball and spitball. Mm-hmm. I used to get a base hit off of him every once in a while, but I can tell you one thing, I wasn't comfortable up there.
Yeah, he went to Detroit the year before you went to Cleveland, but he had been in Boston since 1913.
Yeah.
And he had a good career, not terribly long, but
I don't know.
13 years.
It was too long for me.
I'm talking later on this trip to the other Dutch Leonard, the one that was in the American League for a long time, but played also at Brooklyn and the Phillies and the Cubs. Uh-huh. But he was with Washington for about 10 years.
Yeah. You know,
he was a knuckleballer.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You know, they call them all Dutch. All the Leonards,
right.
They call them Dutch.
Yes.
But this was the old original Dutch Leonard.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
He was the toughest pitcher. Now, Lefty Grove was on a, and Walter Johnson too. But Lefty Grove was on a sunshiny day with that white ball out there. Mm-hmm. He'd throw that ball, I'm telling you, it looked like a sewing thread coming in there.
Mm-hmm.
You never saw a fellow could throw a ball as hard.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about 90 miles an hour and all.
Yeah.
Now, his used to be 190. I don't know.
And too much anyway.
Hmm? But Walter Johnson's ball was live, you know.
Yeah, moved around.
Moved on, and he was sneaky, what we call a sneaky fastball.
Yeah.
You know, he had that sweeping.
That's right.
Boom.
Yeah. Yeah, in his prime, and his prime lasted pretty long.
His prime was a long time after I got there.
Mm-hmm. Shortened Duster Mayo's career? Arm trouble?
He had arm trouble.
Yeah.
And when his arm got bad, he got wild.
That can happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ray Caldwell was a pretty good pitcher.
Yeah, Ray was a good pitcher. Old Ray was a good pitcher.
But that one year, seems to me it was in 20 that Sarge Bagley had his best.
Bagley won 31 ball games.
That's what I remember.
Well, Caldwell won 20.
Who did?
Ray Caldwell.
Oh,
Slim, they called it.
Yeah. In that season of 20.
Yeah. Oh, he pitched a full season then.
Mm-hmm.
And Kovaleski won 20-something.
Kovaleski won 24.
Yes.
Bagley was 31, Kovaleski 24, and Caldwell 20. And
that's right.
Nobody else much of anything.
That's right.
There wasn't much left.
No. What did Euler win that year?
He was just four and five.
He was just breaking in. He was just breaking in. But boy,
Guy Morton was 8-6. Dusty Mills was 7-0.
Uh huh.
And one runner in the World Series.
Walter Mayer helped win the pennant for Cleveland that year.
Oh,
too.
Yes. You and Ten Men for you and Lester, you wouldn't want it.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
And then he goes on in the World Series. Which game did he pitch?
He pitched the first game?
No. Kovaleski pitched the first, the fourth, and the seventh. Mayles pitched the sixth game and shut him out 1-0 on three hits.
Let me tell you a story about Mayo.
Yeah.
I'll never forget. See, I was just, as you might say, I was breaking in. All this stuff was exciting. It was all new to me.
Mm-hmm.
Walter Mayles went out that day and warmed up before the World Series game.
Mm-hmm.
And he come in, and the game was about ready to start. He come in and had a towel, sitting there wiping himself, and I was sitting down. He said, he talked loud anyway.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Well, boys," says, "if you would get me one run today, we'll win." I said to myself, "Jeez." I never say a word. And you know, that's all we got.
Yeah, that's all you got, and that's all he needed.
That's all
he told you.
But he said, "If you get me one run today, we'll win." And George Burns drove it in. The old George.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see, I believe Charlie Jameson. Single, a double, or was on second.
Well, I don't know.
I've forgotten.
I've got another book that does, but I don't have it.
George Burns drove in that run, and we got one run and won the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget that.
I noticed that in the third game, I had forgotten that, Caldwell started, gave up two runs in the first inning, was the loser, 2-1, to Sherry Smith. Mayles came in the first, and went on until the eighth when Euler came in, and Mayles gave him no runs then.
That's right.
So he pitched.
But he was.
He pitched 15 innings, 15 and two-thirds innings.
Not a run.
0.00 ERA.
He was a fine-looking pitcher, but his arm got a little.
Mm-hmm.
He hurt his arm.
Must have been. In 20, he was 14-8. 21, rather. He was 14-8. But then I think he tailed off right after that.
That's right, he did. He didn't take too long.
Yeah.
But we had a good ball club.
Yeah, he was 4-7 the following year.
Yeah.
What about some of the ones on Brooklyn, like Grimes and Marquard?
They were rough.
Sherry Smith.
Sherry Smith's one of the toughest pitchers.
He came over later to Cleveland.
To Cleveland.
Yeah.
And he pitched on our ball
mm-hmm.
club. I'm going to tell you this about Sherry Smith. If Sherry Smith was up there right now, you know them boys stealing all them bases. he'd catch every one of them.
That's tremendous.
He had the greatest move I ever saw.
Nobody's got a good move nowadays.
No, they don't try.
Yeah.
They don't work on it.
That's right.
Well, I can tell you another thing. The rules committee has taken a lot away from the pitchers. They
mm-hmm.
got to do this. They got to step so
yeah,
and so.
That's right.
They've taken
or
a lot away.
Or they'll call a balk on them.
Yeah.
But was Rube Marquard beyond his prime? When you saw him,
he was still good.
He was still good.
But
yeah.
We played against Rube Marquard in the World Series. I did.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen Rube Marquard until 1977 when I went back to Cooperstown.
Mm.
And old Rube knew me, and I knew him. I recognized.
That's great. Yeah, he lost a tough one to Kovaleski 3-1.
That's right.
Then. Yeah, didn't he pitch anymore? Yeah, but he only pitched 9 innings all told. Where was the other one? Grimes won the second one 3-0. Sherry Smith beat you in the third one 2-1.
2-1.
And then you swept 4 games in a row. Yeah, Marquard came in relief in the fourth game for just a few innings.
Uh-huh.
Kovaleski beat him again 5-1.
That's right.
They didn't seem to use him as much as his reputation would merit. Somehow.
Well,
during the season, he won. He was only 10-7 during the season. Burley was 23-11.
Burley was tough.
Always he was a fighter.
He would. Did ever tell you how we beat old Burley in the World Series?
No.
They had a little second baseman named Pete Kildow.
Mm-hmm.
Was playing second base, and Burley Boy, he was throwing that curveball, I mean that spitball and that. It just, why, that you, it's like fighting flies, you know, that thing. But Pete killed up down at second base. Every time Bully was going to throw a spitball, he'd reach down and get him some sand and throw it down.
You're kidding.
That's right.
You picked
and,
that up.
We picked it up.
Yeah.
And we just watched, when you just played, watched Pete Kilduff, you know. If he didn't pick up that sand and throw it down, it was a fastball or a curveball.
You could hit
it. Just
yeah.
blew him out.
Yeah.
But that's where we beat him. So old Bully came over, he came to the Yankees after I got there. And see, he went to the Cubs. And
oh, he played with all kinds
yeah.
of people.
And he came to the Yankees, and I told him just what I just told you.
Yeah.
And he said, I thought you boys.
I bet he was madder than hell.
Mad, he got mad at Pete. I think Pete was dead or something.
Yeah. But Zach Wheat was pretty good.
Yes, Pete was. Zach yeah. Wheat was. So he was. He kind of reminded me. You remember a fellow named Smead Jolly that came out of
sure.
the Coast League?
He could beat him to death in the Coast League, but he never did too much in the American
well,
League.
Well, he'd just throw it in reach. He'd hit it.
Yeah.
But he couldn't hit him off a ball in a ditch.
Oh, no. He'd knock in three runs and let in five.
But that's the way Zach was a good hitter. Just throw it up there in reach. You don't see them kind of hitters.
No. Now. Oh, like Lefty O'Doul and Babe Herman.
Babe, that's right. Just throw it up there.
I'm going to talk to Babe when I get back to California.
Good for you.
That was quite a series, you know.
Yes, it was.
The triple play, the first Grand Slam home run. And
Jim Babby hit the first home run that a pitcher ever hit in the World Series.
And
hit in that fifth game of the World Series.
Yeah, and what amazed me about that game, I was watching it down in Texas on what they called a, I don't remember what they called it. In football, they'd call it a grid graph. But they had a diamond laid out and lights on it, and they'd get a telegraphic report, and they'd move the players around and so forth. And when it was all over, they posted the line score. And I said right away, somebody, that's got to be a mistake. It's impossible. You can't give a team 13 hits and they only get one run. That's it. Bagby gave them 13 hits in the fifth game. One run, 13 hits. You guys got 8 runs on 12 hits.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know...
Grimes started that game.
That's right.
Didn't last too long.
And old Jim was... Bagby was... He's working for a shutout.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a...
Up to the ninth inning.
Ninth inning. In the ninth inning, I forgot how the fella got on. Somebody got on first base.
Mm-hmm.
And Tris Peaker ordered him to take his windup, you know, get more on the ball.
Yeah.
The pitcher used to take windup then.
I know.
All right. Well, we have to... And the fella finally eventually scored, you see.
Yeah. Stole second on the windup.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then we got back into the clubhouse after the ball game was over. And old Jim was mad as a wet hen about taking his windup. He just wanted that fella to score.
Well, Bagby was just 1-1 in the series. And because of those 13 hits, he doesn't look good in the statistics. 15 innings and 20 hits. Goleski 27 innings and 15 hits. Anyway, that's quite a series.
It sure was.
Now, in 21, Yuli began to come along.
He was just 21, 22, 23, and long and now.
And Riggs, as I said to him in the hospital this afternoon, talking about his being an infielder, he said, yeah, I was just a utility infielder there those years. I said, anybody that was hitting the way you were had to be in the lineup every day. He says, that's what I thought. But then they finally made him an outfielder.
You know what? When Euler was in our lineup...
You had 9 hitters.
We had 9 hitters hitting over 300. And we had 13 men hitting over 300. And you couldn't play but 9. And Steve was one of them.
That's right.
Steve was hitting 380 something,
and he wasn't
couldn't
that,
get in the lineup.
He wasn't that accomplished an infielder.
Oh.
He became a good outfielder.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was like, yeah. He was a good infielder, good glove man.
Yeah.
But Steve couldn't play second base.
And make turn the double play.
Yeah, and make the double play, yeah. Because he got his arm hurt, elbow, and he had a stiff arm. He couldn't.